I'm now joined by Antonio Flores from Lawbird, who, of course, can work out most things for everybody. Good morning to you, Antonio.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, my friend. I'm very
Excellent.
Keeping warm and dry at the moment. You've not been out on the bike recently. I haven't seen you. I haven't seen you going past my window.
Whenever the weather was allowing me to do so, you know, on a mountain bike is not a problem, but on a road bike, you don't want the water.
Oh, just don't. I've been looking at them coming down the Istan Road with very thin tyres, thinking, what on earth are you doing? Right, then, let's get off what we do in our free time, shall we? And look, it's, of course, the Lawbird Legal Clinic, if you want to get involved. 952-78-4000, studio@tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe. Officially, you can WhatsApp me as well, +34 645 99 67 95. We're talking about communities of owners today and the repercussions. So give me a little bit of a brief on this one, if you would.
Yeah, you know, the idea was just to run through a few court cases, interesting cases that we've heard of. Well, these are not our cases, but, you know, they're interesting court rulings, okay? And, you know, one of them is to deal with touristic apartments. We all know that communities have the right to ban community touristic apartment users, from owners in the complex.
Yeah,
they have to vote a resolution, and then there is a ban, obviously because it's noisy and it's cumbersome and so on and so forth. But what I didn't know, and we found out through a court ruling, is that a judge has just now said that you don't even need a resolution voted by the AGM. You can actually go to court and say that a particular apartment is causing a lot of disruption in the community and therefore it should be banned, which is very, very interesting. This was a case where, imagine a peaceful complex, people just, you know, going by their daily lives, enjoying the peace and quiet of the community. And then there is an apartment where they do short-term lettings. Now, this court ruling particularly said that because the owners of that apartment were renting it out short term, then there was a lot of noise, there was damage created in the communal elements, and even there was fear by certain members of the community who were taken as witnesses, fear of meeting strangers all the time in the entrance halls, as well as the fact that, for example, keys were being distributed to strangers. So, you know, you might have, imagine, 15 different tenants in 1 year. Well, all of them would be given a key to the entrance. Now, that causes a certain degree of anxiety and certainly fear.
Yeah, you can understand it, can't you? Because this is. I mean, I know that certain places like Barcelona, for example, put a block on things like Airbnb because they were worried about, you know, the stag and the hen parties and the guys getting together and coming out and, you know, they're on holiday. But it's obviously different from going to a resort hotel and people having parties. If you're in a block in Marbella, for example, and you've got your nice little place there, and it's almost, and the gardens are beautiful. And then suddenly, you know, every weekend you get a different bunch of people coming in and partying, and passing out by the jacuzzi or having barbecues, or just generally, you know, them generally having party 24/7, and you just want to have a quiet life.
Yes, correct. You know, and obviously the noise and the restless nights, is one thing. But the fact that you're going to be meeting with people that you've never seen before on a regular basis, who could be anyone, was enough for this judge to order the cessation, the interruption of that activity straight away. So it didn't require a voting in the AGM.
Right.
Which is very interesting because the current legislation says, you know, with 3/5 of the votes, you can stop short-term lets on communities of owners on complexes.
Can I just ask you a question on that one then? So for example, if you're in a community and say there are 60 apartments in your community or townhouses or whatever, can it just take one person to say I don't like these and go to a judge? Then you could have somebody who just doesn't like people and just say, right, I don't want any. Yeah.
Well, according to this ruling, it could be. I mean, this ruling doesn't make it case law, okay? So at least not binding case law, but it is something that they might consider for the future. Okay, so yeah, it can happen, especially if it's a very noisy thing, and you can prove that. Okay, well, it's noisy, it's dangerous, or, you know, there's people around all the time. It depends, you know, I mean, it's not only young people. See, Barcelona is an example of sort of, you know, the young weekend type of holiday makers, you know, and they are there for partying. But you might have people who come for weeks, and they're just normal holiday makers. So it's got to be a situation where it does become burdensome, cumbersome. It becomes an issue for the peace and quiet of the community, and that has to be proven. Okay.
Interesting indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of community owners, because I mean, community owners and administration meetings are always interesting on, you know, on the state of the human condition. But if you are the administrator, is this talk me through this? Is this about the is it a
this is another ruling?
Yeah.
This is another ruling. It's very interesting. Again, these are this is written in the law. You just find out through reading cases. This happened in Barcelona. This administrator of a community of owners, he found out that someone had died. And I'm not talking about finding out someone's died 2 years later. That person passed away on the sofa. Do you know what I mean? It was just like.
Oh right. Yes. Okay. Yes. They didn't find the body. Find the body 2 years later. Right.
Yeah. It wasn't the body type of thing.
The third floor flat's been very quiet recently. Yeah.
It happens, unfortunately, with the elderly, and they're not, you know, not the family. They haven't got family around. But this person did sort of a pass away officially, and the administrator noted this man didn't have any family, so he was effectively intestate. He didn't have family to leave any of the assets he had, one of which was a property. So he notified the state. Now he went there and he notified the state. And the state took the estate. The state took the estate.
Yeah, got you.
And he was given a thank you. That's it. So anyway, he said, "Well, I'm owed something, surely." So the government said, "Well, listen, no, you know, where does it say that?" But anyway, he went to court, and the court awarded him 10% of the value of the estate for notifying the government. That, you know, because the government takes 100% of everything if someone dies without any family members to claim. Okay, so he was awarded 10%, which is very interesting.
So, if say the apartment's worth 150,000 euros, for example, then you get 15,000 euros as a thank you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's people do die interstate, but you know, it used to be the case before more when a lot of these properties were mortgaged and nobody wanted to inherit. Not that there was nobody to inherit; it's just people. You know, the children did not want to inherit it because the properties had very large mortgages on them. This was a few years ago with the crisis, you know, and the values of the property very low and the mortgages very high. So, that was happening before. Of course, the state or the government would not take over a property that had a very big mortgage. There's no point on it. Mm. So, okay, another thing which is interesting, you know, I keep hearing a lot of people when they come to my office, they want to set up companies. They talk about having a company with a share capital. Okay, you know, in Spain the minimum share capital is 3,000 euros, which is quite low. I think in the UK is nothing. There's not a minimum requirement. Anyway, Spain's 3,000, which is quite low. A lot of people do ask me, whether they should increase that to a larger amount because they seem to think that reputationally or from an image or credibility point of view, it looks better if the share capital is higher. Okay, well, I will say that, yes, it does happen, okay? Share capital can be an indicator of a company's net worth. But, I would say that you find situations where that's not the case, okay? Now, I came across a company in Madrid, which is called Solaria Ingeniería y Construcción, which has sales of 160 million euros a year, and they had a minimum share capital of 3,000 euros.
Right.
Okay. So, you see, because the share capital, when a lot of people say, well, how much share capital should I have? Well, that depends on how well the company is doing. If the company is losing money, the share capital has to go up because there is a rule that effectively you know, says that if the losses of a company are above 50% of the share capital, that company is bankrupt. Okay, so you've got to be careful with that. So you're keeping a minimum share capital. But a lot of people say, I want to have 100,000 share capital because it's going to be looking good for future, you know, sort of partners or investors. And the answer is yes and no. You don't need to do it. So long as if the company is solvent, the share capital could be the absolute minimum. And this is an example. A company with, you know, 160 million euros of turnover, which is substantial, having that the absolute minimum 3,000 share capital. Don't forget the 3,000 is the limit of the responsibility of the direct of the owners. Okay, they wouldn't respond for anything more than 3,000.
Keeping share capital low then is going to be good for the directors of the aforementioned companies.
That's correct. I mean, it's, you know, if you start having losses, you have to up that or put the company into insolvency. If you keep it low, your exposure is low, but you have certain rules, okay? Yeah. So, you know, it's just having one's accountant or advisor inform the client, the investor, how much is the advisable share capital, depending, of course, on how well the company's doing. A company that is doing very well and has no losses doesn't need to have any specific share capital. So share capital of the company doesn't go by how much you turn over every year. It's based on more actually the losses. If you have losses, then you have to increase it or put that company into administration.
Another thing is where everybody is filing tax returns and accounts, etc. And if you don't for your company, if you don't file the accounts for your company, this could land you, a recent judgment by the Supreme Court, this could land you in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing you see sometimes. You know, not everyone files their accounts every year. You sometimes see companies that may have years of unfiled accounts, okay? So that technically what it does is one thing. It blocks the land register, the company's house, sorry, for any other change in that company. If you want to publish something in the company, in the company's house, you are prevented from doing so until you put your accounts in order. I know some companies were not filing accounts because they did not want others to know how well or bad they were doing. Okay. Now there is a Supreme Court magistrate, okay, the top of the top, who says that if you don't file accounts, it can actually make directors responsible for corporate debts. Okay. Now, I see a lot of the times people forget about them, or, you know, when it comes to filing them, they've got to pay money, sort of 500 euros in summer, which is typically the cost of filing, and they forget, oh, they just don't pay it, and they can't be bothered effectively, you know, basically. So they just leave it. And 1 year goes by, another year goes by, and before they realize, you know, 5 years without filing any company accounts, just because maybe they've just been just forgotten about it, or they were not, they just didn't get around to do it. But now basically it's becoming more of an obligation, okay? Whether you want people to know or not how well you're doing, you have to file your accounts every year. If you don't want to do it, then just don't have a company, okay? So you can work as an autonomo. How many people work as autonomos? And certainly they don't have anything published. They don't need to do it. So that's a bit more of a confidential, anonymous thing. Okay, but a company is something that's always going to be open, and anyone has access to everything that company is doing every year just by buying in the company's house a full record of the accounts. So if you don't have them on a yearly basis, it can start becoming a problem for the future.
Okay.
These are all the things I'm seeing every year in respect to companies, you know, and we always advise clients to try to keep everything in order.
Yes,
in order.
But it is the way, isn't it, of doing business, especially in Spain, that sometimes, you know, things, you know, getting everything out in the open can sometimes, and in order, is sometimes anathema to doing business when you've got so many other bits and pieces coming at you as well, Antonio.
Well, you know, this is the thing. When you start a business, the last thing you think about is the accounts and running things properly. You just, you know, you are focused on marketing, on sales, on getting businesses, dealing with providers, dealing with complaints, dealing with a large number of things. And people, a lot of the times, investors don't have time for these very important things, which is, you know, having your company well correctly registered and tidied up from an accounting point of view. And that requires a number of meetings, it requires a number of things, but some people are not there for numbers. You know, I know a lot of very good salespeople business people that are very good salespeople, but unfortunately they're not good with books, with accounts, with all corporate things. If they don't delegate, then they realize that they're not doing things properly. And also, unfortunately, the tax office in Spain is a bit like Google Translator. You know, you see Google Translator is something that's become extremely proficient in translating, because it learns from its own mistakes, and also it learns from text that people put up on. So the algorithm is very clever. So the Spanish tax office is doing the same thing. So every year they have new systems to improve the efficiency, and they cross-reference so much data that it's becoming so difficult to be under the radar in this country as it used to be before. Anyway, that's obviously a topic for another day, but it's an interesting thing. You know, you'll see, compared to 10 years ago, things have changed so much. They have so much information. Becoming a bit like the north of Europe now.
The way that you said that, coming like the north of Europe, who'd have thought it? But then also they're all talking to each other as well, which is, so you can't think, all the authorities in Spain are now sort of communicating with each other, so you can't go under the radar as before. So to keep over the radar and in the good books, Antonio, if they want to come to you and find out how to set everything up correctly, and also anything else that might be crossing their legal radar, where do they find you?
Okay, so they can call us on 952-861-890, or they can email us on info@lawbird.com.
Antonio Flores, just a quick one as well, Antonio, just by the way, if you, next time you do try the Istan Road, because as you know, I'm halfway up the top, because they're doing some work up there, and I've noticed the road surface is getting a little bit interesting. So when you do your, and I've seen you come down the hill, face, you know, that particular big hill under the bridge, watch out for it, because not only are there big trucks coming in one direction, but the road surface is a little bit interesting, even in my 4x4. So take care, my friend there, because I know you found me at the side of the road one time, but I was in a 4x4. So if I find you at the side of the road, it might be a little bit more interesting.
No, you see, I mean, cycling is sometimes a mix of intuition and instinct. So, you know, when you see that tarmac, when you see the road brownish with dust, you know that you've got to be very careful. Apart from the lorries and the trucks and the vans and, you know, you see, the four-wheel drive.
And there you go, Antonio. You see, it's all about intuition, you know, and keeping your eye on the ball, which is somewhat like you at Lawbird handle the legal scene. You see what I did there, Antonio? Absolutely.
Yes, very true.
Antonio Flores at Lawbird. Ride safely, and we'll speak again soon, very, very soon indeed. Take care.
We definitely will. You take care as well, my friend.